I'm here to discuss the beginning of the universe, and this is a subject that has always had certain theological implications. So I'll first of all take you through a bit of history and our understanding of how the universe has operated, and we'll get to possible theological implications in due course. Well, here's the medieval universe, a medieval document, and the idea was that the Earth was at the center, and then there were spheres around that with the planets, and then there was an outer sphere with the stars, and finally there was the heavenly sphere where God resides, and God looks down on everything. Now, this changed as the scientific age developed, and Newton, of course, said many things about the universe. He thought that the universe has to be infinite because God fills it, and God is infinite. He felt that matter is evenly disposed throughout an infinite space, clumps together to form stars and planets. Some of these ideas have survived, and one should bear in mind that Aristotle had denied that physically infinite things can exist. This is a philosophical question, possibly also a scientific question. Now, during the 19th and early 20th centuries, as you probably know, it became recognized that the Earth is very old, like millions of years old. And a lot of study came from geology. Geologists said these rock layers, they have to be very, very old, not just a few thousand. There were debates about the age. But many scientists saw the universe as infinitely old. So you could have a finite universe, but a finite Earth in age, but you, whatever universe you like. And people wondered if our galaxy was just surrounded by infinite space. That was a thought. And it gradually became recognized that the nebulae, which people would see, were distant, large island universes, galaxies like our own. Now, the 20th century saw some spectacular advances. And most important of these probably are as follows. In 1915, Einstein produced his theory of general relativity. That enabled people in due course to produce models, mathematical models, of a universe. Before then, it was all open speculation. Einstein said, here's some mathematics that you can use. Hubble showed experimental evidence for the fact that the universe is expanding, and that implies, in the end, a big bang and an origin of time. That is the current position. Please note this definition. The Hubble parameter is the rate of expansion of the universe in suitable units. So that's just a number that tells you how fast the universe is expanding. And in the 1960s, there was a discovery of a microwave background. Everywhere that you aim your microwave detector, there's a background of microwaves, which is part of the universe. It's not part of the apparatus, it's part of the universe. And people detect this and they measure it. Now, here is a schematic picture of how we tend to see the expansion of the universe. I'll go into more detail in a few minutes. But the idea is that it's space that's expanding. Einstein's general relativity puts equations into this and allows you to think coherently about expanding space. It's in three dimensions, expanding into time, but this kind of picture gives you, like a balloon expanding, gives you an idea of what's happening. And the universe might be finite or infinite. There's certainly a finite observable universe. Well, here's Einstein in 1929 saying, people slowly accustomed themselves to the idea that physical states of space itself were the final reality. And there are some people slowly accustoming themselves to that idea. And since then, we add quantum fields, which I think would puzzle these people even further. So the space is full of quantum fields, which I'll mention later. Now, we need to go into a little bit more detail. So here is a picture of the Big Bang, and I'll just take you through what we think is happening. Now, excuse me, at some point there was a start of the universe. We don't understand what's going on with that. It's just something to start off with hypothetically. And then suddenly, the common belief these days is that space really started to expand hugely rapidly. And this phase is called inflation. It's not something that's happening now, it stopped. It happened over a very, very brief period of time, tiny fractions of a second, and blew the universe up into a sort of uniform or nearly uniform sphere very quickly. It stopped after 10 to the minus 32 seconds. The universe by then is 10 meters in diameter. After that, or during this process, there are different models of inflation. Things like quarks and gluons and photons form elementary particles. This is still work undergoing to try to understand this in detail, but something like that happens. And these particles were pretty hot. After 3 seconds, all the protons are now formed. No, the protons in you and me, mostly, were formed then. And they can stay as such, or they can form heavier elements, at first deuterons. After 400,000 years, light atoms are now stable. Before then, all the photons that were flying around were always absorbed and re-emitted, and the universe was opaque to radiation. After this time, it's transparent to radiation. The radiation just keeps on going, and as the universe expanded over many millions of years, the wavelength of these hot photons stretched, and they're now microwave photons. The photons that were produced then are now the cosmic microwave background. What we see now is a certain reflection of the state of the universe at that point. Then it goes on. 400 million years, hot, heavy stars form. I won't go into great detail. They live a few million years, explode, they form heavy elements. After 1,000 million years, galaxies start to form, and we can observe them back to this point. After many more millions of years, smaller stars and planets such as our own, heavy elements come from the debris of the first stars, which had a very short lifetime. And eventually our solar system formed, and that rectangle saying now represents 13.7 billion years after the original Big Bang. So that's the picture. And so we ask what really was going on right at the start, if we can. Now, I should say that this inflation business represents an observational barrier. We can observe, perhaps, the inflation process indirectly. Before then, it's all speculation, and maybe we will never really know. Now, a bit more about inflation. This is recent. There was an experiment called BICEP, still is, which operates at the South Pole, and it has been measuring certain polarization patterns in the cosmic microwave background. The idea is that this sudden inflation is due to something called an inflaton field, which is just a name, really, but it can be modeled in quantum physics. It's like negative gravity. And during this process, the field and the space-time acquire small variations of quantum origin. These get amplified and give small variations in the cosmic microwave background and so on. But did this really happen? Well, the BICEP experiment claimed observation of polarization patterns. it needs confirmation, but if it were confirmed, it would vindicate the ideas, firstly, of inflation, secondly, gravitational waves, because they come into it, and thirdly, quantum gravity effects. So this is an enormously powerful observation if it's genuine, and one should certainly take great notice of this, because it seems to put three markers on the wall for these three phenomena. So now we come to something a bit more theological. I'm going to introduce to you the so-called Kalam argument, which is Islamic. It's not particularly Christian, but Christians have used it. And in its original form, it says this: anything that comes into being must have a cause. The universe has come into being, so it must have had a cause. And we may identify this with God. It's probably not a proof of God, but it makes God's presence a very likely sort of hypothesis if you wish to adopt that. There are other forms of this. We're talking about chains of causation going back to a starting point, and if you believe in causation, which is a philosophical question, then if everything must be caused and the cause isn't in this universe, it must be from outside the universe. So that's the philosophical argument. Now, Aquinas adopted it and so on. Now, not surprisingly, people have contested this. I think you could say that most people would agree that the basic Big Bang should have a cause. Yes, there's some kind of agreement on the Kalam argument at this point. But what was the cause? If you're a true physicalist, you would say, I don't believe in God. There must have been some previous existence of the cosmos which gave rise to the universe that we see. So could this go back indefinitely? Because if it stops just at some earlier time, you still have the Kalam argument, which the sort of non-theists would not particularly like. You should take this argument seriously, at least Stephen Hawking seems to. He said, a point of creation would be a place where science broke down. One would have to appeal to religion and to the hand of God, something he doesn't seem very keen on doing. Now, there have been some recent theoretical developments, and one is a general theorem about expanding universes or cosmoses. It's called the Bordeguth-Vilenkin theorem, and it says, if the Hubble parameter, if you remember, rate of expansion, averaged over all past times, is positive, in other words, if it has always been expanding, there must have been a beginning. And this has got to do with the speed of light, and it seems a fairly general theorem. There have also been some recent thermodynamic theorems from a guy called Aaron Wall. I haven't fully digested all of this, but he says in the abstract of his paper that there are problems if you have an infinite age to an infinite universe or an infinite number of causal happenings, entropy producing, in a finite universe. So that sort of adds into all this as well. And there are a few caveats. Now, I have to indicate to you how hard these cosmologists have been working in order to produce hypotheses about what could have happened before our present universe. All of this is speculative. It may never be subject to experimental confirmation. This is an open question, and I was speaking to Alan Guth recently. He said before the inflation, all possibilities remain open. That was his recent opinion. Well, you could have a simple Big Bang, just one universe starting from some kind of quantum object or other. Then the Kalam argument, it would appear, could well apply. It would be a natural argument to make. What about oscillating universes? Because there are ideas that the universe sort of expands, contracts, and so on forever. Now, actually, it seems that it can't go on forever. Eventually, the universe has to go into permanent expansion. And recent observations on distant supernovas have indicated to us that we're in an expanding phase. it's not going to contract again. Now, these are recent observations. In 10 years' time, it could be different, but that's what people think now. So this puts some doubt onto the oscillating universe. Not only that, people have shown that the oscillations don't just stay constant, they slow down, and they must have been faster in the past, and in fact, there has to have been a beginning in time in constructing these. This is at least the most commonly held opinion. So there, you can't easily, let's say, according to recent models, say that these oscillations could have gone on forever in the past. Apparently not. There's a popular model called eternal inflation, which says that this inflation process with its inflaton field is all the time happening, and every now and then it sort of stops, and a pocket of normal universe like our own condenses out of it. And our universe is just a sort of island or pocket in a sort of enormously inflating inflaton field. Nevertheless, the BGV theorem implies that even this must have had a start. So you don't sort of escape anything here, but you do get an awful lot of universes. People have suggested that the universe could have had an eternally uneventful past. Nothing happened until suddenly, kaboom, it's all something happens. Now, anything like this gives you stability problems, because remember, infinity is a long time. Any kind of probability or instability for anything to happen at all will give you an effect. So stability is an issue, because if it were at all unstable, it wouldn't have lasted an infinite amount of time, and it wouldn't be like it's being supposed. So this seems to be a difficult idea to maintain, especially in a quantum universe where probabilities, even if they're tiny, would still have an effect, perhaps. Hawking and Hartle have produced a model which sort of rounds off the Big Bang, changes the nature of time. Well, yeah, but this is not real time now before real time starts, so you still have a start to the kind of time with which things can actually happen in and cause the processes. So you still have to argue the first cause process surely needs to have a cause. Everything emerges from a quantum object. That sounds good. And I wouldn't say anything against that kind of idea. But we would still then say, well, what caused the quantum object? So there are still questions there. Lawrence Krauss wrote a book called A Universe from Nothing. It's not nothing. It's space, and Einstein certainly thought that space and its properties were real. It's got quantum fields in it. It's not nothing. And actually, all of these other arguments, or at least whichever one you like, would still apply. So he hasn't really got anywhere as far as I know. A few more comments. I'll skip this rather quickly. You can do all sorts of funny things with general relativity. You can take an infinite age to the universe and compress it into a finite age. This will do some things to the mathematics, but it could be that some particular model with an infinite past could be turned into a finite age anyway, but that is not something I want to discuss in detail. People object to the idea of physical infinity. That's a reasonable philosophical point to make. I think the answer to this is that if you really want to talk about a physical infinity, you'd better make sure that the mathematics is defined very, very carefully. You can't glibly say, oh, but it could be infinite. Infinity is not to be played with lightly, and you should define everything rather carefully. Note that we can't make any measurements of anything infinite. It's not an experimental quantity, because we are finite and so is our apparatus. So it does rather appear that the Kalam argument holds up at present. This may change, and they are always sort of extraordinary ideas which people can come out with. How extraordinary do you allow it to be? And this all implies an extra-physical first cause. The Kalam argument is aimed basically at materialists. Those who believe in God anyway will appreciate this argument, but it won't be definitive for them, probably. I haven't excluded spiritual causes. That's another question altogether, depending on your faith and how you understand God interacting spiritually with the world. And you might refer to an argument I wrote, expanded version of this talk in the journal Science and Christian Belief in 2013. So I don't think there's any theological problem here, because this argument does not exclude anything that you feel you that is good to believe about God as sustaining the universe, causing things to happen, and so on. That's just fine. This argument is just to say to people that the physical world needs some sort of extra cause, and that's all it says. Final comments. I think, I've said nothing about the nature of physical laws and constants, the anthropic principle. That's another talk. A caveat: the science can always change. How fantastic do you allow a so-called scientific model to be? That's a matter of judgment. Some people would say it's logic. Some people would say just science fiction. One uses one's judgment here. You have to believe in causation. That's a philosophical question. And although rational justification for God doesn't necessarily require there to have been a first cause, you could have an infinite universe and God sustaining everything. At present, it seems likely, let me put it with this sort of degree of definiteness, it seems likely that the argument appears to hold. It says nothing about the nature of the first cause. What kind of God? That's another question to be dealt with by other means. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much, Peter. Really clear talk and very helpful talk. First question, please.
Larry Krasner's view, I think, is repeated by Sean Carroll in another way, where he says that the total gravitation and matter energy is zero if you have a Big Bang out of the multiverse. Can you comment on that?
Okay.
Can we just repeat the question?
Yes, yes. The question is to do with making a universe bearing out of something else. If the total amount of energy adds up to zero. Now, what this seems to imply would be that it's like creating a particle from some quantum field. And this particle, it sounds as if this particle, universon, has got zero mass, but it's got a lot of structure inside it. So I don't think you can just casually say, oh yes, this sort of thing can happen because it's got zero mass. You've got to take it all into account as well as that.
Have you thought about how this applies to, I wish I could remember the researcher's name, there's a number of people looking into models for the beginning of the universe coming from 10-dimensional brains colliding and...
I know what you mean. Ekpyrotic. I believe this has to, when you look into it, it has to have a beginning. I'd have to check that up. I know I looked at it at one point. What happens to time itself?
As we go backwards.
Okay. Right.
It is certainly not, I'm not a cosmologist, so I don't really know, but it's certainly not unreasonable to think that maybe time just goes away. I mean, doesn't advance forward or doesn't advance backwards?
All right. What happens to time itself, quote, as you go backwards? And why should it go away?
That high of density.
Now, my reply is that this is a picture that you're producing of time going backwards. Of course, time doesn't go backwards. What you're really saying is, could the universe have just started with a discontinuity in time? Well, if that's what the mathematics says, that's what it says. Mathematics can give you all sorts of things. And these arguments imply that it's quite possible to have a finite time. This is, you know, part of models. They don't all have, there are many models, but this is, it's not impossible.
We have one more question. Okay, let's have one.
I believe you mentioned that during the inflation there was anti-gravity effect. Can that be translated to the dark energy, which seems to me the universe is accelerating again?
I think that question is beyond my competence, and I think that people think about that. Don't think there's a very good model of dark energy yet. Would really rather, I don't know. Do you know anything?
Dark energy. It's similar, of course. Today this acceleration is much, much, much less than is believed to be during inflation. So inflation would be very strong anti-gravity, and now we have weak anti-gravity.
Whether this will really work for the dark energy that we have now, I think it's work in progress.
Yeah, I mean, we don't really know what it is. We don't really know what the inflaton was either. But I mean, there's hypothetical ideas.
Yeah, absolutely.
The anti-gravity then, and there's different ideas for what drives it down. But I mean,
but it's looking more and more. Positive constant, a very tiny value that has no good explanation.
We don't know these things yet. People are still working on it.
Final point, and then we just finish.
All of the inflationary models have extra scalars that drive the inflation that don't really have to do with this constant. So whether it does or not, that would be a very speculative.
Oh, absolutely. So people speculate that the Higgs particle might be the inflaton, but they don't know. There are different models people don't know yet.
There's a lot more questions, so please, if you can see Peter afterwards, thank you very much.